Greetings all, what is the good word? Thank you for stopping the scroll and spending some of your valuable time with us. This is the Coptimizer podcast, and I'm your host, Patrick Flannelly, retired chief of police and all-around wannabe renaissance man. Here we look to spend some time with leaders and pioneers that have a passion for public safety and those who look to build strong and resilient individuals and organizational cultures, both of which result in stronger communities. We look across industries with a focus on peak performance. Our biggest questions, what can I do to squeeze every little drop of life out of each day? How do I get a little bit better today than I was yesterday? And how can I tap into the energy that makes it all possible? While our focus is on first responders and those in public service, the lessons shared here on the Coptimizer podcast are universal. Our goal is to hire healthy, retire healthy, and maximize impact in our personal and professional lives in that time in between. To drive value and squeeze every drop out of our performance so we can be awesome for our families, our departments, and our communities. Better performing officers make for better performing organizations. This is not a complicated truth. It is the simple truth. From the top cop to the street cop and all those working in support of high-performing organizations, this show is for you. It's time to Coptimize. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Coptimizer podcast. I am on the road again. I think there's a song about being on the road again. Down in Lexington, Kentucky, at the Transform Law Enforcement Conference with Chief Joe Monroe. Chief, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Pat.
So this is, I think, if I understand correctly, this is the ninth year that you've done the Transform Law Enforcement Conference.
So we started this about 8 years ago, and of course lost 1 year because of COVID. So Transform, to give you a little history on Transform. Transform was an idea that was birthed with a partner of mine in a bar, and he works for Galls. And Galls being one of the largest.
All the best decisions are made in bars.
In bars, I know. Over bourbon. So we came up with this idea because I was very frustrated with the lack of good training for law enforcement leadership, because everything was pretty much in a box that was being delivered as leadership. So we needed to change it, and I said, let's transform the way we teach. And so, you know, my buddy decided, he goes, hey, let's get Galls on board. We'll be your sponsor. And it just took off from there.
That's awesome. So for those that are listening, Galls is headquartered here in Lexington, Kentucky.
Galls is a national, international law enforcement, fire, EMS, public safety company that provides uniforms and equipment around the world. And their main headquarters is here in Lexington, Kentucky. So that made it even easier for us to partner with them in hosting Transform at their location.
If you're in law enforcement or in public safety, there's a good chance that something that you have on your person right now came from Galls at some point or some iteration of it, or there's something in your bag, in your go bag or in your squad car. Yeah, they pretty much are all things law enforcement. So that's really cool that they were interested in getting on board and helping. And this, so, you know, this is 10 years ago. You're ahead of your time, because what's the one thing that we keep hearing publicly about policing today?
Yeah, there's the lack of training. And, you know, everybody wanted to defund the police, you know, after several issues around the country. And this was really a opportunity for us to change the way we think. And that's how the whole name Transform came about. It's change the way we think, change our culture in law enforcement, and really see what we can do differently for the future.
So your background, tell us a little bit about you and your history in law enforcement and your career.
So I've been at the University of Kentucky for 30 years. I've been the chief, counting my interim stint, for almost 17 years now. And that's kind of unheard of for a chief to be around that long. So it was, a challenge in building my team. And once I built the team within the police department, it really gave me the opportunity to start seeing how I could give back not only to my team, but to others in law enforcement. So over the years,
17 years. I'm not laughing at you. It's like 17 years is a long
it's
time
a
to
long
be a
time.
chief.
It is. But the thing is, Pat, I'm still energized with it. I'm still having fun, and I still feel like I'm making a contribution not only locally, but as you see in Transform this week, nationally. I mean, when we have agencies from all sizes from around the country, from Miami to Washington to Maine to California. I mean, it's just all over. People are hungry for change in culture of law enforcement. And I just had a conversation with one of our students this week who came up to me and says, I feel re-energized. I feel like I was at the end of my career and I didn't have much to give. She said, now I feel so energized that I'm ready to get back and start changing things and really making a difference and developing people, as I go out the door.
That's awesome. And it's stories like that that keep you going. And this is such a cool conference. I feel very fortunate to be back down again. We'll be presenting on Friday on our data and the program that we started with Specialty Health years ago. And this year is pretty exciting because it's the first time I've got to meet Russ Kleber in person, who's going to be a star of the show. We got Chief Jared Hart coming down from Michigan, and we get to talk about some data that I think is really impactful. But the name of this podcast, right? Coptimizer, which is a spin on the cop optimization concept, and that's really been one of my career-long passions, is officer safety and wellness, and then really all from the physical wellness side. So obviously, having served as 10 years as a chief myself, that's why I chuckle at the 17 years, because I've got a great slide that I show. I can't wait to show it tomorrow. I don't want to give it away on the but I just use it as an illustration as to what this profession can do to you. It doesn't matter what rank you are or where, what you're doing in a police department, but it's, this career and this profession can beat you up as much as it can lift you up. And like that student that's being re-energized, that is refreshing to hear, because we are in a crisis in this country that people are just not recognizing, in terms of being able to recruit people into the profession, being able to retain that talent that we do have. You can't replace 20 to 30 years of experience. It just doesn't happen. We have to have new lifeblood coming into the profession, and we have to have professionals that are there to train them and teach them and guide them along the way.
You're exactly right, Pat. I mean, I think that's one of the things I kicked off this Transform week with, is when I addressed the group on Monday morning, talking about we are at a tipping point, and we are in a major crisis right now in law enforcement. And because you're looking at almost a 90% reduction in applications for police jobs around the country. I mean, you're looking at most departments are anywhere from 20 to 40% short. The thing I say is, where have all the good cops gone? And
we're close to Nashville, right? And there's some good country music coming out of Kentucky. That's a song right there. They should have been singing it at Buffalo Trace last night.
Yeah, for the listeners, I mean, we do it right here at Transform. What we do is we have an all-star line of trainers during the day, and then at night I host you somewhere around town or in the local Lexington area. So, one night we'll go out and have some fun. One night we'll go out and have a good dinner. Another night we'll go take them on a tour of the Buffalo Trace Distillery like we did last night. And it really gives them a taste of Kentucky. But what it does, and most of them don't realize this, but it brings them together. I mean, they start talking more. They start sharing stories. One of the students was telling me on the bus ride home last night that it's, you know, what he's learned this week and what he's going to be able to take away back to his agency in Georgia. So, I mean, everything is there for a reason, the way we structure it.
And it works very well, as proven through the increase in demand. And today's speaker, I think most that are listening to this podcast will recognize the name Paul Butler. He's world-renowned, and he, you know, he's such an entertaining character, but his message is spot on. And, you know, it really resonates. Every time I hear it, it's like, okay, it does fire you up.
So Paul has a unique style, and Paul, to give you a history, sorry, with Paul Butler and I, he basically, we met at the FBI National Academy back in 2005, and I always joke because Paul and I are not morning people, and so we would be the last ones to show up for class, so he and I were always seeing each other in the hallway together, and we became good friends. He became our class speaker for the National Academy, and went on to retire from Horry County Sheriff's Department in South Carolina, and really was looking for something to do. So we pushed him out there to start doing this public speaking. And his public speaking style is so different because it goes from a targeted message to humor to motivation to what you've learned. And it's so, unique. But Paul does a wonderful job on it. And of course, I have him structured on day four for a reason because, you know, I start off with Dr. Jim DeLong on Mondays talking about culture and generations. And then Dr. Kim Miller comes in and she talks a little bit about ethics and culture. Then I talk a little bit about leadership and crisis leadership and what are some of the current issues that we are facing. And we have a good roundtable discussion on day three, and then four is Paul Butler, and then of course, you know, day five we end it with I fed them all week good food, and then when they find out on Friday, whoa, from the specialty health team that you're a part of, that maybe that wasn't a good thing to have.
Yeah, I can't do that every week. We like to tell people that, you know, moderation can be a good thing. And then even less than moderation on other things, but you know, you only get one pass around, right? So you gotta live a little bit as well, and you can't take everything too seriously. But awareness is the most important thing. Understanding what your risks are, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But so I'm really curious because it's always one of the things that I've been fascinated with since I've been retired now just over a year, and I get to travel and I'm working with police leaders from around the country, and you get to hear kind of the stories about what people are struggling with. Obviously, recruitment and retention is something that is the forefront of every police leader's mind. I think it's what keeps everybody up at night. What else is going on? What are some of the other topics that we're hearing about that are coming down the pipe?
Well, I think going back to what you're talking about, recruitment, you're seeing a lot of these agencies around the country are throwing $20,000, $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 sign-on bonuses. But the issue is going to be is they may get them in there, but how are they going to retain them for the long haul, you know? And so that's part of it. The retention to me is the bigger piece. Because you have to be able to retain those officers. So you have to understand what motivates them. And that's one of the things we talk about this week. How do you lead them? How do you lead down and how do you lead up? And how do you lead horizontally? Because leadership is a 360-degree process. Recruitment and retention are two big things going on right now. We have to be creative in the way we do things. We have to think out of the box. And so that's one of the things I challenge them with this week is always find a solution, but if you can't see the solution, get creative. Think about it doing something differently that nobody's done before. We talked about this week, too many times we're recruiting the same way. And we're all doing it that way. We're going to career fairs. We're going to the athletic fairs, trying to get former athletes. We're going to the military, trying to get military. We've got to be more creative in how we do things. One of the things that we're doing at the University of Kentucky Police Department is we started a process where we're going into the high schools now and recruiting. So we're recruiting kids that are in high school and staying in touch with those that are interested in it, sending them birthday cards, sending them milestone cards of encouragement throughout their high school. And then that way they understand when they graduate high school, they may want to come work for the University of Kentucky Police Department because they feel valued. And so it's that whole thing of thinking out of the box, thinking creative and how we do things, because the status quo is not working.
Yep, that's for sure.
Yeah, we got other issues dealing with, our perception in policing right now. Our public perception of policing is probably at an all-time low. Unfortunately, with the deal in Nashville, last week with the shooting down there, the response that Nashville Metro PD had was so quick and eliminated a threat from the time they got notified, saved so many lives. But what people aren't looking at is the repercussions of that positivity that's coming out of that from their response is people now are looking at, hey, law enforcement, does know what they're doing. It's just different agencies because we took a black eye on Uvalde. Yep. Yeah. So, every agency is different. And I think that's why there's such an emphasis that I do and some other chiefs do is on training. Training should be, it's one of the most expensive operating pieces of your budget, but it's a necessity.
And it's oftentimes when people talk about defunding, it's oftentimes one of the first things to get cut when budgets get cut. And that is where, there's that interesting juxtaposition for how anyone can, with a straight face, say that the right thing to do to improve the safety of our community is to defund the police, because it has far-reaching ramifications that people outside of the profession just don't understand, because they haven't spent their career inside of the profession. And sadly, many people form their opinions about public safety by what they see on the 6 o'clock news or what they see in popular culture media, television shows, movies. And who doesn't like a good movie, right?
Yeah, I think Hollywood really hurt law enforcement by, putting these unrealistic things on TV that people now believe, CSI or NCIS, some of the things that they feel like are just, to them, they see it, and they feel like it's real, like you're talking about. And it's it causes, a headache and problems and challenges for law enforcement in the real world. So it's different.
But it comes, but that's why this conference is so cool. And what you're doing here is so impactful, because you're focusing on training. We have to find new solutions, just like you said, right? You can't just dip into the same basket every time you've got problems and pull out the same solutions. Times are changing. People are changing. Technology is changing. It's always been like that. And the struggle has really befallen us was predictable. And, whether it's preventable or not, I don't know. But, yeah, it's when you don't prepare the next generation, when you don't have a positive reputation in your community, when the media doesn't understand at large really what we're doing in policing, when popular culture paints a completely unrealistic, while it might be entertaining, it's very unrealistic in terms of how we perform the job. Now there's long vacancy lines and not enough people coming to fill them.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right, Pat. I mean, I worry about the future of policing, where we're headed, but you also look at the history of policing, we're almost in a cycle, and, it cycles around in a circular pattern, and we're almost coming back to that whole thing of where we started. You know, we look at different times and tumultuous times over the history of law enforcement. You'll see that as we shift from that period to another period, law enforcement really transitions and changes. It almost becomes a pattern, so to speak. But I think it's something that we'll get out of. It's just going to take a little time, but we have to keep and maintain what we've got. We can't lose any more policing.
So when you talk about Uvalde, right, we've talked about this a lot on this show, good, bad, or indifferent, but really what you have there, so when you compare and contrast Nashville to Uvalde, they had a very good initial response in terms of being there fast, but then they lost the initiative, and that's where training and experience comes in. Not having a strong leadership presence there to push the initiative and get done what needed to get done. In Nashville, we saw just the opposite. Now, we can pick apart these things all day long, and I try not to be too critical when I'm not there and I haven't seen the full reports. I mean, we've seen most of the stuff that's come out of Uvalde, and I think we're still seeing some things, and we're continuing to learn. But I've had several discussions about that on the show where it all comes back to one theme, one common theme, and that is training and preparation. What are we doing to train and prepare our leaders and our officers to be able to respond to incidents like this and do it in a continuous cycle where there are no gaps in continuity for what we're doing, and we're learning from what's happening around the country? Because I hate to say it, but, you know, in like a lot of professions, policing isn't alone in this, but, you know, there's a lot of leaders out there that are wishing and hoping that a crisis does not befall their own community because they're worried about their response. And nobody ever wants to see, you know, a response get tested, because that means innocent people are being injured and killed needlessly. I mean, but at the same time, if hope is your plan, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, I think one of the things to think about is a crisis is an opportunity to learn. And I think that's why it's important to look at, you know, everything that happens around the country and learn from it and apply that to your organization before it happens to you, so you don't make those same mistakes, or you've learned from somebody else's what you can do better. And, you know, that's one of the things that I'm really big on is making sure we never let a crisis go to waste. We should always find a positive in every crisis.
So on Wednesday, you said you had these roundtable discussions. What else is popping up? I got a few things in mind, but I'm curious to hear what some of the issues that might be popping up outside of training, outside of preparation. You know, I can't help but to think about technology. You know, technology is changing so much.
Yeah, I think with technology, I mean, that's one of the things you look at, and it's changing and evolving on a daily basis. So that's something you look at and you're like, what you have today, whether it's drones or drone detection, drone patrols, all that stuff changes almost on a daily basis. You know, some of the other things that you're seeing in law enforcement right now are the wellness standards. You know, how can we get better applicants that are healthy and maintain them? Because typically what you see, and you know, both know it, over time, that poor, fit law enforcement officer starts a career, and by the time he retires at 60, he looks like your grandfather or something with a little pot belly. But, you know, the wellness...
It's happening a lot sooner than 60, yeah. I can promise you that.
Sometimes it does. So that's one of the big things that I think everybody's looking for is developing that wellness program. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about in our agency is it's almost like I call the pyramid for success. And it's basically a three-pointed process. One is your physical health and wellness. The second piece being your mental health and wellness. And then the third piece being your financial health and wellness, making sure that you're preparing yourself for life after law enforcement. So I think those are some things that are important. Then you look at developing your partnerships. Too many times leaders don't, they're focused on the policing side of developing partnerships, or the public safety side, or the governmental piece. You've got to think about, out of the box, the opportunities that are available to you with corporate world. The corporate world, just like with our situation here with Transform, you know, we have Gauze as one of our lead sponsors, and you have Point Blank, 5-Eleven, you have Fetchheimer, you know, you have Streamlight. All these different people want to be a part of Transform, so they're putting money up and helping us put on this conference and making it a success. So, you know, being able to balance that in the law enforcement arena is another one. You know, another thing is what's the body-worn camera impact going to be? We're just now starting to see it, but I think over time you're going to see it's even going to change even more. You know, virtual training, that's another one that I'm very adamant about, is, you know, putting on some type of virtual reality system, putting those goggles on and actually simulating what you're in a different world and how you're going to react to different things. And so there's several different companies that do a wonderful job with that, and I think it's continually evolving to the point where you're going to see a lot of basic training and in-service training include virtual reality.
Yeah, it's one of the ways that we're going to be able to expedite. I call video and body worn cameras, you know, an exponential learning tool, because and I was just having a conversation about this earlier with one of the people here as well. 10 years ago, body cameras were very rare, and about, you know, 5 to 7 years ago, they started to become a little bit more prolific, and now, you know, the expectation in this post Ferguson, post George Floyd world is that every officer have a body camera. Of course, it comes with a significant amount of cost, but I think what the public was expecting from that is they were going to be demanding higher levels of accountability for the police. And what they don't realize, you know, the police in general already have very high levels of accountability. The body camera becomes a tool and extension of that tool to be able to even make a good system better. Policing, you know, it's very interesting, and I say this a lot, is it always has room for improvement, but policing has never been better. But the public perception is that it needs to be a lot better. And when we have this huge divide in what we think we know and what is real, that's where, you know, again, that creates some of our problems. And it'll come back to recruitment, but I want to come back and make a comment, because you can spend $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in an incentive program to try to attract a lateral candidate. And for those that are not in law enforcement that might be listening to this, that's what's happening around the country. We call it the cannibalization of police departments, where everybody's looking for trained employees. And it used to be kind of one of those, you know, dirty little secrets that nobody talked about openly, but you would look when you saw like a really good officer at another department, you know, somebody might talk to them, hey, you should come work for us. We got a great PD. And you know, now it's like there are billboards all up around the country. Hey, Seattle police officers, come down here. Hey, Minneapolis cops, come here. And, you know, when the pool is shrinking, the number of people coming into the profession are dwindling, you can throw a cash option out there. And number one, you're never going to hear me say police officer being paid too much, because we're not. So, you know, that is a good little benefit is that, you know, some pay and benefit things are improving that should have been improved a long time ago. But this is not a profession that you get into for if you want to be wealthy and make tons of money from a monetary perspective. Probably not the right profession for you. And to incentivize people financially might be attracting some of the wrong candidates. So
I would agree with you on that, Pat. I mean, you look at what's going on in Kentucky right now. I mean, I worry and you know, tell these other chiefs we're about ready to hit the glass ceiling, because what's happened is post Ferguson, you're seeing all these agencies start competitively raising their salaries, and it's getting to the point where if agency A raises above agency C, then B is going to get above both them, and it's just a stair step, and to the point where there's got to be a breaking point.
Yep.
And I think there's going to be that glass ceiling we're going to reach, and then what are we going to do? You know, what is going to be the next thing we have to do to keep policing? Now, I'll tell you what we did. We just passed into law here in Kentucky a revision to our current employment agreements, so an agency can have an employment agreement where they send somebody to the police academy, paying their salaries and everything, you know, all the cost. And then when they graduate and get sworn in, that agency basically is their primary employer. And if that officer tries to leave within a 5-year period, then the agency that hires him, you know, in the state has to pay the full amount of whatever their employment rate contract is. So, you know, you say it costs you $60,000-$70,000 to outfit an officer and train them and go through the application process and all the tests you do, and then that officer walks away after they graduate, you've lost, you know, $60,000-$80,000 investment. So that's one of the things that you're starting to see now in Kentucky, is really starting to see these employment agreements went from 3 years to 5 years, starting in July.
Yeah, and I don't see that getting any better, right? Because the bodies aren't coming. And interestingly enough, you know, what our main sponsor for this show is Performance Protocol, and what they do is they bring executive coaching into police departments. They train up police executives, police officers, those that have great experience. They train them in the art of coaching, and then they work with people inside the police department. But as part of that program, we do surveys with agencies before the program starts, and then we do it at the completion. And a lot of people don't believe this when we tell them, but finance and the cash incentives, the pay and the benefits, while they are important, they're not in the top four.
No.
That's not what employees are looking for.
No.
Right. This generation of employee, they want to know that the agency is going to invest in them and is going to identify a clear career path for them, and that's going to assist them along the way, and that it's going to be a right cultural fit, that the people inside of the organization, that they're going to feel respected, and you know, compensation is generally fourth or fifth. So if you're trying to incentivize somebody with cash, it's putting a Band-Aid on an arterial bleed. It's just,
yeah, that's exactly the way
it's not going
to
help.
That is just one piece of a whole big problem. And, you know, like you said, it's just a Band-Aid. It's not going to be the fix to everything. We've got to figure out how to stop the hemorrhaging, and a Band-Aid is not going to do it.
Get into the schools. So you're not the first person I've had this conversation with, but you are the first person that's had this idea, like, we're going to go in, we're going to send cards, and you're really making a commitment to building a relationship with these kids in their younger years. And this brings up another point. And again, I apologize. I haven't told you this, but I know I've told the audience this a few times. But if we're not going to be our own advocates inside of policing, how can we expect somebody else to do it for us? How do you, because I ask cops all over the country, do you, and will you encourage your own children or your loved ones to come into the profession of policing?
Yeah, I think I have, but mine have chosen to take other paths.
Well, you're an exception, because I ask that question frequently. Yeah. I'll ask it tomorrow in front of the audience here.
It is. I mean, there's very few that do. And, you know, one of the things you were talking about with coaching, that's where we're missing the boat in leadership is we talk about leadership, we talk about leadership, and we talk about leadership.
Yeah.
But we don't talk about coaching and mentoring. And, you know, where I used to coach football some in youth leagues, it's something you got to look at is how do you develop a player is the same thing as how do you develop a person that works for you. You have to challenge them. You have to motivate them. You have to move them to get them to learn more knowledge. You know, and that's the same thing for a top leadership in a department because too many times we get to the top, we stop learning. You have to keep pushing yourself to learn constantly. So I think that's one of the things we have to do a better job of doing.
Yeah, and it's interesting you should bring that up too because we talk about that quite frequently. If you're working at Galls or a Fortune 500 company, you don't have a choice in the matter. That's kind of an expectation is you're gonna be assigned an executive coach and you're gonna work with the coach because we're investing in you because in the end we know that that's not just good for you but that's good for the culture of the organization and that's how we're gonna be successful long term.
Yeah, that's where we have to be more forward thinking.
Yeah, and so oftentimes as an organization we have to train, but as individuals we have to learn. And you have to be willing to learn and you have to open up to it. And sometimes where this program is really effective in is that it brings in people that understand the profession because cops can be, and rightfully so, can be very guarded and they can be protective of their space and not necessarily open up to outsiders. But it's not necessarily a good thing when they don't open up at all, and especially if the only people that they're opening up with are their peers and their close associates, because you can get into the doom loop in a hurry, and that will pull you into dark places.
That's true.
So it's having somebody from the outside that has good perspective that you can speak freely with. Like you don't have to worry about whether you're going to be judged inside your department about what you're thinking, ideas you have, or you know, thoughts about the organization itself, other things like that. So there's a ton of benefits that come from it. But I keep coming back to this idea again with young people. I was talking with Chief Gasek, Gary Gasek. He's from he retired from Milwaukee PD, and he works. He's a chief down in North Carolina now. But he started at age 18, and he was in an explorers program where he was a uniformed officer at 18, but he was not armed, and he didn't get an academy spot until he was 21. But from age 18 to 21. He worked inside the police department, learned the ins and outs, got exposure to people that were there. So it's a great interview. So people that are thinking about programs like that, I would encourage you to go back and listen to that episode. But he, you know, he kind of talked about the very same thing in that how do we expect our young people to be excited about the profession of policing if we're not getting them excited about the profession of policing, showing them that it's not just about you know, chasing bad guys down on Friday night, you know, and having a case wrapped up in an hour.
Yeah, it's that whole piece of, one, what is real policing, not Hollywood policing? And, you know, you see a lot of these kids now that they want to major in forensics because they've seen all the CSI stuff, and they feel like that's what they want to do. And so that's why we started going to the high schools and really, you know, talking to the kids, telling them about our department, getting them interested in it, and then start recruiting them at that young age. And, you know, it's no different than what an athletic coach does. They find talent in the youth leagues or somewhere, and they start recruiting them at a young age. And that's what we have to change the way we think. You know, it's just like we were talking in the class here at Transform, that how many people were forced to be here? And they had no idea what the training was or anything, but their chief or somebody says, you're going. And they come in on Monday, they're really, you know, closed-minded. They don't want to, you know, talk to anybody. But then as we start opening their minds, they become so engaged that they forget they were forced to be there. And they're like, this is the best thing ever. I'm going to come back, you know, next year. And I'm like, well, you can't come back next year. We'll do a conference and you can come back to the conference. But, you know, what it's doing is it's really making people excited about being in law enforcement again.
That's really cool. That's really cool. So I think that's a big area of investment. And I think that's something that we can do on a national scale. You know, you're at the University of Kentucky, right? So you probably hear about student loan forgiveness and programs like, let's just pay it all back. And I'm not going to ask what your opinion is on it, but I spent 4 years with Uncle Sam to help pay for my college, and I used every penny of it. So I have an opinion about that, but I'll keep it to myself. But I think a program like, there's an idea, right?
Yeah.
How about we invest in a program where we help pay for college, where we can get people into explorer-type programs, where we can get police departments partnering more. I know there are some out there that do it well, partnering with universities and others, and, you know, in finding different ways, like, you know, virtual school, that's the future, right?
Yeah, it really is. I think that's one. It's a new way of training, because you're looking at this generation that's coming up. They're the generation who started learning iPads and phones and all the digital devices before they could even walk almost. And I look at these kids and they know technology so well, but their social skills is where they need help. It's, you know, the workplace. How do you integrate what you learned at a young age into the workplace? And I think that's an opportunity for us to help start coaching and mentoring these young employees as they come on. How do you balance that? How do you make it work? And while utilizing the area that they're an expert in.
I like it. All right, well, I don't want to give away too much of the sauce for tomorrow, but it's a good way to cap off the week, because you touched on it. One of the things that we're concerned about is the well-being of our police officers, because this comes again, I'm going to relate it back to recruitment and retention issues, and some of the problems that's creating is we have a firm understanding of that distress that police and, you know, our first responders are under is carcinogenic to their health. Shift work is carcinogenic. It doesn't bode well. So we have to teach mechanisms for healthy living and ways to mitigate the stress. You're not going to mitigate everything, because somebody's got to work at night. People may call for defunding the police, but that doesn't mean people stop calling the police. So you need somebody there on the opposite end of that line. When you have an emergency, somebody's got to be there. And it's just unhealthy to stay up all night. And I can tell you that from personal experience, because I spent most of my career working nights by choice.
Same here.
I loved it until I realized I got to around age 40 and I was like, yeah. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe that wasn't so good for my health, but I was just very fortunate to stumble into some information where I was taking steps as a young person to try to mitigate as much of the downstream negative effects that this can have. But hire healthy, retire healthy, optimize performance in between, and investing in your local police departments is an investment in your community safety. Because I'll go back to that, right? If you cut funding and if you cut the cost, then all you're doing is, you know, you're forcing executives into making decisions about what we say yes to and what we say no to. You can't say no to salary and benefits, or else you're not. You know, nobody's going to come do this job for free. They might for the first couple of years. But after that, they're not doing it for free.
No, they'll realize real quick they can go somewhere else.
And in this environment, they don't have to. So what this environment has kind of created is that people are, you know, that when you're running 10, 15, 20, 30% short and the calls are still coming in, that puts a lot of pressure on your existing workforce. And that pressure leads to some emotional distress. Like, oh my gosh, am I here? Am I going to be the one left holding the bag while everybody else is gone? So we have young people coming in, all of our experiences leaving. So now you've got this big gap in the knowledge gap where you don't want the young leading the young. That's not healthy for the organization. You don't want your veteran officers being sick, unhealthy, having adverse medical events, and then retiring otherwise. And then on top of all that, right, you know, suicide rates are at an all-time high in the policing profession. And that's not by accident. It's a byproduct of the stress and the pressure that is being put on police officers from all directions.
Yeah, and I think that's an area that we have to do better in. And that's a whole piece of that, you know, triangle I'll talk about. You got to have not only the physical health, but the mental health checks. And so I think that's something we have to work on and really develop better programs to take care of our officers, not only physically, but mentally. And, you know, get them the help they need and don't hold a stigma, on them for it.
Absolutely. And I bring that up too because you made an introduction this morning that I thought was awesome. We had a little four-legged friend running around the room. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so several years ago, an officer came to me with an idea that she felt like would be a good program. And to the listeners, I'll be very honest, I thought it was a stupid idea. but as a leader, I was like, all right, she's done her homework on this. It's a very well-written proposal. I'll give it a shot. And that proposal is to have a dog that became a critical incident stress dog. And some people call it therapy dogs. And we started this program, and I will tell you, it has taken off. This morning we brought in to transform one of our critical incident stress dogs and the handler. And he talked a little bit about the program and really sparked a lot of interest. But it was neat to sit in the back of the classroom, and I was watching the dog work the room.
I was too.
He was
made
going
the same
around
observation.
The tables, making sure, anybody need to pet him, he was getting petted. but it was really interesting to watch that as people were paying attention to what the handlers talking about, but also they were very focused on that dog. And some of them who, were macho and didn't want to be seen petting the dog, they just kind of slowly lay their hand down beside the chair and the dog would nudge it, and then they felt like it was okay to pet. But it's been a great success for us at the University of Kentucky, so much that now we have two of them. We send these dogs anytime there's a critical incident on campus, whether it's a student death or a staff member, that even the death could occur off campus. But these dogs really help bring a lot out of people and relieve that stress.
So I'm going to go back to to the beginning of that because so important, so important. You thought it was a dumb idea.
Yeah.
But here, all right, listen up, officers. Well-written proposal, a well-made argument, presented in the right way.
Yep.
For leaders, you have to get outside of yourself and recognize that sometimes I don't have all the answers and I shouldn't be expected to have all the answers. And I have to have faith and trust in my people when they bring ideas like this. Now, sometimes financially or for other reasons, it's hard to maybe make some of these programs happen. But that, so there's a perfect example of it. I had the same thought. I was sitting in the back of the room watching that dog work the room, people's eyes lighten up, and I'm like, man, that's brilliant. And I would have, the fact that you're bringing it, going out on scenes with it for what you're doing. I grew up in a university town. I've worked right across the river from Purdue. So I'm like, I'm calling them up when I get back. I'm going to tell them about this program. Maybe they already are doing it. Maybe you've shared this, but What a great idea.
Yeah, it has been one of our probably our best programs. But, you know, you talked about how I felt about the proposal initially and, you know, skeptical. But as a leader, you've got to be willing to trust your people because you've invested in them. And you bring them along to the point where you're saying, okay, if you got an idea, be creative, think out of the box, and then they're doing that and they send it up. And I mean, you almost have to give it a good serious look.
Yeah, and I like that concept. Right? Don't come tell me what we should do. Show me what we should do and explain to me why.
Yeah,
and give me the argument.
Yeah, that's always been my philosophy. You know, if you've got a solution to something, that's wonderful. But don't bring a problem or an issue without a solution.
Yeah, what's the saying about that? You know, an idea without a plan or a proposal is just really a complaint in disguise.
So, that's true.
Yeah. So there you go. If you can think it, if you can imagine it, then, you know, you can write a plan for how you can get it done. And then, We
just have to continually challenge ourselves in what we do and the way we think. And, yeah, that goes back to transform. That's the whole premises behind transform is transforming the culture, transforming the way we think, transforming policing.
Amen. Amen. All right. Well, we've been going for almost an hour. The conference is going next door, so it might be time to go check in. But I always like to ask this question before we wrap up these interviews. What book are you reading right now?
Actually, I'm not reading any book.
Are you listening to any books?
Here's why. I am taking notes to write my own book.
All right. I like that.
It's a process I started a couple months ago where I've come up with different ideas and you know notes that I'm taking into a journal. And the plan is to develop that into a book.
I like it. I won't ask what it's about. Okay, so let's go back then and let's say, okay, if you had to recommend one book to a young leader that was transformational to you, we're going to stick with the theme, what might that book be?
Well, you know, you've got all the typical leadership books, you know, the Colin Powell, the Jim Collins, the John Maxwell's. I mean, all those are good books. I'm not a reader, so what I like to do is I'll scan through and take my highlighter when I see something that stands out to me, and then I take that and I really digest it. I'm more of a type of person where I like those short snippets or quotes. And, you know, if you see in the room on the wall in there is what I taught about yesterday is quotations that I've picked up from somewhere that I put onto paper, and then we talk about it and learn what those quotes actually mean.
And so you're doing the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, you can say that. That's how I passed high school.
Well, audiobooks, you know, that's the great thing about audiobooks. So I was on the drive down here. I'm listening to Peter Attia's new book called Outlive. And I'm only a few chapters in, and I can tell everybody already this is going to be one of my top recommendations for reads for every police officer.
Really?
because he really is talking about everything that I've been talking about for the last 20 years in terms of wellness and how do you prepare for not just living a long life but living a functional life for as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to give away the book or the secrets, but I gave my first wellness lecture, I think it was 1998 or 1999, and I'll talk a little bit about this tomorrow, but I stumbled across some data after I saw what the really terrible long-term mortality rates were for police officers. We're talking anywhere from 18 years to 24 years below the national average in lifespans, but even back then in the late 90s, the World Health Organization had data that was suggesting that the average person was living the last 12 years of their life suffering from an illness or debilitating sickness or illness or injury that could have been prevented through a lifestyle change in their younger years. So the last 12 years. So it's kind of like in this, Peter Attia is talking about this, right? He's like, you want your life. You know, we talked about a cliff earlier, like we're going off the cliff. Like he's talking about, you know, in your life and in your health span and your lifespan, you really want that cliff, the end to be kind of sudden, right? You know, maybe not like all the passengers in the backseat of grandpa's car. You know, we know how that that joke goes, but, you know, not. Yeah. Living, you know, being able to live and do the things that you want right up until the end or as long as possible. And that has to start when you're young. So there you go. There's my shout out to Dr. Peter Attia and Outlive.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, though, to think about because, you know, stress is what's killing more police officers as well as their physical health. And we have to take better care of ourselves both physically and mentally. And, you know, that's one of the things that I do better on the mental side than I do on the physical side. And by decompressing and just disconnecting, as I like to call it. You know, because we have become a society that's so addicted to our cell phones, especially in the leadership roles. You know, you hear it vibrate or you hear it ping next to your bed in the middle of the night. You could sleep through a thunderstorm, but by God, you hear that little ping and you immediately sit up and check your phone.
Heart rate goes up.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's to the point where I was losing sleep over that. And I really started to have to put on a do not disturb or something like that to keep my phone quiet enough to give me some sleep. And then I take time that I'll go to the Grand Canyon or somewhere that I know I have no cell phone coverage. Because then, with no cell phone coverage, I'm not worried about getting a call.
So I couldn't help but to pick up my cell phone when you started talking about cell phone because you reminded me of something I want to show you on my cell phone. See that?
It is. I mean, it's a... People don't realize how many times you pick up and you check your text message, you check your social media, you know, you're just always picking up the phone. Did I miss something? And I really catch myself doing it a lot. So, like at the dinner table, if I'm out with somebody, I set it up on the table, and then I'm looking at it the whole time instead of talking to somebody. So, I learned to turn it over. And then I'll be picking my phone up and looking at it and then turning it back over. And then to the point now where I'm just like, keep it in my pocket.
I joked about this, but I called it my chief detox period for that first 3 to 6 months. You know, after spending 10 years as a chief, I you know, it is Pavlovian, right? That, you know, that sound, you know, it generates an instant physiological response, especially when you have custom, you know, in your phones, you can set up the custom tones, custom vibrates. So, You know, I did that thinking to myself, well, you know what? I don't want to have to look at my phone every time. It just goes burp, burp. But if it goes burp, 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 now I know I'm in big trouble because that's one I've got to look at right away. Or if I feel it in my pocket or kind of, but it still distracts you from the moment.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's an addictive thing.
All right. Well, hey. I do want to end us out on one thing because you said it earlier, and I couldn't help myself when I started wandering when you said, you know, we're in law enforcement, we're back where we started. So, you know, maybe we can leave the show today with this. That's a, you know, good old little King song. All right. Well, I think that's enough of that. Hey, I appreciate you being on the show, Joe. I really appreciate the opportunity to be down here and share what we've learned through our wellness experiments and what we've done and the work that we've done on the lab tests and others and just general information. So. It's been good.
Yeah, Pat, I appreciate you having me on and look forward to hearing more about it and in the future with your podcast. And, you know, we're moving in a different direction, law enforcement, and it's time to go.